Paul Tonko, I'm reminded by almost everybody I speak to about Social Security that when FDR set up the Social Security program, your chances of getting Social Security were not good because most people were dead by the time they got to be 65. So the question now is, since most people aren't dead, since we're living into our 70s, should Social Security's age requirement, in other words, should you be 65, should you be 66, should you be 69, what's the deal?
Yeah, I think that there are all sorts of fine tunings we can do with adjusting the cap that exists that flattens.
Yeah.
Well, there's a figure out there in excess of 100,000, 106, 112,000 that is that cap. Once you reach that, your contribution to the system remains flat. I think that we need to adjust that. I think we need to be more realistic.
Let me just get it straight. As a Social Security recipient, let me ask you this. Okay, so while I'm working, I put in a certain amount of money. It goes up until you reach, whatever you say, $112,000. After that, you pay what everybody else pays.
Right.
You don't go up. It's not progressive.
Right.
Is that what you mean?
Right. It's not progressive, and it has not been addressed well enough, I think, in recent past years. And, you know, as the baby boomer onslaught develops, I think we need to be realistic as to how that cap is established and at what level. Before we begin addressing age as a, you know, age increase as a number, I think that, you know, there are ways to be more sensitive to stabilizing the trust fund than adjusting it simply through an age qualification. I think that that would be the worst thing we can do. I know the same has been offered in Medicare, and I think you're going to put people at risk who are probably just going to try to survive through that 2 or 3 or 4 year window. If you're raising it from, say, 65 to 67 or 8, there will be people, I think, that just play the risk game just to get by. So, you know, there are ways.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I think people will go hoping, crossing their fingers, hoping that they'll do well for a couple of years when and then they qualify if we raise that limit. I think it would be a very dangerous thing to do. And again, I think the whole Ryan plan is resurfacing again. We've seen it in the last few days.
Privatization.
Right. And the vouchering out, the couponing of a Medicare benefit, you know, that takes us back almost to the days of early 60s when the attitude out there, the climate for senior citizens was that there was cherry picking going on. And only those who were in relatively sound health and that could afford a policy were covered. And so the reason Medicare came to be and Social Security came to be was to provide stability in the lives of senior individuals and couples. And I think that we need to keep that in mind. What is the essence? What's the spiritual quality? What's that soulfulness of Medicare and Social Security? And it was to reach, you know, the many, many Americans who, you know, worked hard, paid into these programs, by the way, you know, this
sure.
push to call them entitlements when, in fact, they're earned programs. You invest. We invest in Medicare. We invest in Social Security. I think politically, President Roosevelt with Social Security did that for politic reason. He did it so that there could be a sense of ownership because he knew from day one and probably before day one that there were those agents out there that wanted to deny this program and will do their best through the years and decades to undo it. So I think that there's a way for us to provide stability. There's ways to initiate reforms that enable us to keep the program stable. We have strengthened the stability of Medicare by some 9 years with the Affordable Care Act. We have strengthened the Social Security program. There's more to be done with the onslaught of baby boomers, but I think we can do it. But when you hear talk of the Ryan plan reemerging and where they want to, again, I think work a deal that is industry favorable, where insurance companies will then have that, you know, business brought to them with this voucher worth 30 cents on the dollar. I mean, who's digging into their pockets more deeply now? But it will be seniors. They're going to have to pick up that other 70 cents, which is diminishing the program significantly. And it has you shopping again. And you start wondering about the ability, the viability of a program where seniors, for instance, which is the fastest growing demographic in our society, are going to have to shop around for programs and deals in order to keep their security afloat. I just don't think it's the best way to do things. And there's a system. Keep the system intact. Do the bulk purchasing of pharmaceuticals. Do the doc fix where you come up with a structured payment so that you have providers out there. And with Social Security, provide the underpinnings of revenue that will be progressive in nature and not deny a good program in Social Security or a good program that we've realized in Medicare.
Paul Tonko, we only have a few minutes left, but I do want to ask you this. Hillary Clinton, it seems to me, it's a very interesting question, whether she's getting ready to run for president. You know, to me, it's quite clear that she is, that Bill Clinton certainly helped. Obama owes. And there's Biden sitting there as the, you know, vice president. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, you know, I think I would share your assessment of the situation. The former president, President Clinton, lost his voice, literally, in this election. And it goes to show you how much work he was investing in this. Now, I'm certain it's to a large degree because of his belief in the principles that the Obama campaign embraced. But I think there's also, you know, reason to believe that he saw that as a segue to a campaign by the Secretary of State. I would sense, I tend to believe that there's an interest there. And when you look at the demographics where an audience that is very favorable to her, women, minorities emerging in stronger numbers in the electorate, those are favorable highlights from this election that could be transferred over to a 2016 run. And I think she would probably enjoy a lot of crossover
from
the Republican ranks.
It'd be so cool, wouldn't it? First woman who was once married to a president. Clintons have gained themselves a certain amount of, you know, royalty status, if you will, and a New Yorker to boot.
Well, you know, it would be cool to have that New Yorker in the White House. It certainly helps the state. But, you know, you talk about cool. It would be a series of elections that are cool, going from, you know, the emergence of a African-American president,
right,
who is then reelected, the first to be elected and reelected, and then perhaps a woman who campaigns for the office. It's rather interesting.
Yeah. And there's one last question, and that is that apparently the Republicans are pushing Senator Kerry to be the Secretary of State. They don't want Susan Rice. Kerry runs. They get another shot at that Senate office. He has to be replaced. And now we even see Martha Coakley, who lost, hinting she might be willing to run. For those who aren't seeing, you should send the face Paul Tonko just made. What do you think? Is the face enough?
Well, I think that first, the Ambassador Rice, the efforts against Ambassador Rice are just unbelievably
disgusting.
They are. Whatever disagreement you might have, fine, but to label her incompetent or uneducated or not bright, my gosh, you're talking about a Rhodes Scholar who has held various posts, who has always performed well. And I think the public sees it for what it is. And I still believe that the president will present her name.
Do you?
Yes, I do. And, hey.
Take off the richest man in the Senate.
Well, yeah. And again, the interesting domino effect, if Senator Kerry is named, will... You know, Elizabeth Warren, Senator-elect Warren, did a remarkable job in that campaign. And I first met her in orientation as a House member in the 111th. And from the initial interaction with this individual, I was overwhelmed with her ability to... Yes, Elizabeth Warren has this innate ability to present a case in very... layman terms and make it very powerful and turn it into table talk. And she is an incredible communicator and also a sound policy thinker. And so, you know, it would be interesting to see what happens with that domino
effect.
Well,
I have to say, first of all, Paul Tonko, thank you so much for being with us. It's always wonderful. And I have to say, I'm proud to be a citizen of Massachusetts.
Well, of the Commonwealth.